You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
What may be the greatest sports day in Cleveland history, is it not? I mean, I guess the greatest day would be the day the Cavs won the title, but you're getting the rings and the banner being raised.
Yes,
tonight,
you're right. And
the fact that the World Series.
And the fact that the game is, you know, both of those are going down, but 50 feet from each other.
Yeah.
100 feet, right? And I think that the Cavs winning was great, but the fact that it's happening, you know, happening here and that happened at Golden State, it's going to be amazing. And just imagine what the celebration is going to be like if we have to come back and win it in Cleveland Game 6, Game 7.
It is going to be amazing. Obviously, it's Tuesday. We'll have Tuesdays with Gribbs. He'll be with us at 1:30. John Koskill from Pro Football Focus at 2. A very good interview from Jordan Poyer as well at 2:30. Now, before we get into it, let's just update you on a little bit of news from the Cleveland Browns. Made a couple of roster moves, Matt Wilhelm, and they brought in quarterback Joe Callahan, formerly of the Green Bay Packers, who we saw in the preseason opener.
I remember him.
And they also brought in an offensive lineman, and I'm looking for it
and
right.
And a center, correct?
A center as well, yes, which is something that you and I had talked about. So they brought him in, and the offensive lineman, Gabe Eichert from Buffalo. Eichert is a center, originally signed by the Titans as an undrafted free agent in 2014. The Browns had him on waivers in 2015, inactive for one contest this year, two games with the Buffalo Bills. He is a center. Now, to make room for him, they released a defensive back, Darius Hillary, who had just been called up from the practice squad last week, and fullback Malcolm Johnson. And you and I had wondered, once Dan Vitale was here, what that would mean for Malcolm Johnson. And, well, you have your answer there. Malcolm Johnson released, and Vitale will be the team's fullback going forward. Another center brought in. I think it's a good thing. I think it gives them some flexibility at the middle of their line if the Cam Irving experiment, you know, continues to have the struggles that it has had early in this season. But those are the big moves there for the Browns. Again, not a whole lot, obviously. It's just Tuesday, but a couple of waiver claims as they continue to try to tinker with the bottom of this roster. And I think getting another center is always a good thing. And Gabe Eichert hopefully can come in and play and make an impact for this team on this offensive
line.
Yeah, and Callahan's just, I would think,
a body.
Another arm to be here. Now, he's on the 53, though, for...
Sure, 3 weeks.
Well, no, because it's waivers. It's different. It's not practice.
Correct.
But he is on the 53 probably for this week, I would imagine.
Right. Sure. And I think when you look at the center position, you know, something I talked about, and I think, you know, Jim Donovan was listening and kind of edified, of just having some depth at the center position, really not knowing, you know, penciling Cam Irving, but I think Cam Irving's name each and every week is simply just penciled in. That's easily erased. If he can't get the job done, we have seen, you know, the shuffling and the efficiency of our offense when Greco goes to center and you bring in, you know, whoever it is playing guard, Drango and Alvin Bailey, Betonio and Alvin Bailey with Greco at center when Cam Irving was hurt with that chest injury going back a few games. And now you get an opportunity for a guy to get in here that you've obviously liked, that you get him back. He's going to learn this scheme. He's going to work with Hal Hunter, you know, on a week-to-week basis. And I think for him, he's going to latch on to the operations of how this offensive line and this offense gets ready with Kirby Wilson, with Hugh Jackson in the passing game and on the run game to get them ready each and every week. And maybe, I'm not saying maybe, it's likely we'll keep him here as the roster expands once the season's over to 90. And put him in our pipeline to develop alongside Cam Irving. And the one thing that I think is so great for a lot of football teams is you don't essentially trot out next spring with sewed up starters,
yep.
Especially not for a football team going down the road that the Cleveland Browns are. You want to create as much competition as possible. And, you know, and as I always say, you know, and the Bible says, let iron sharpen iron, you know, let these good guys, you know, duke it out, and I think for Sashi Brown and Hugh Jackson, as we've heard them talk consistently, they don't care where they're drafted. You know, it in some cases it has an underlying tone about the number of shots that a guy will get. Obviously, a first round pick's going to get a lot of shots to really screw it up for you to go, can't play at this level. Got to dump him. But it's going to breed competition. I think if I were Cam Irving, you can't watch the film each and every week and solidify yourself as a starter when you're bringing in other centers. It should motivate him, and hopefully the physicality and what we thought we should be getting out of him as a first-round pick will improve on a week-to-week basis.
Here's a draft profile of Eichert, who's 6'4", 300-pound center out of the University of Oklahoma. Uses his hands well to control and steer defenders. Highly intelligent, plays smart, sets the protections, makes a line call, was a four-year starter at Oklahoma. Outstanding work habits, exceptional character. Weaknesses: can be overwhelmed by size and struggle to cut off speed. Could stand to do a better job finishing blocks. Bottom line, functional positional blocker who lacks the foot quickness, athletic ability, and strength desired in a starter, yet consistently finds a way to get the job done and overcome his physical limitations. Intelligence and intangibles are off the charts and could allow him to capture and hold on to a starting job. The sum is better than the parts. So this is a guy that hopefully could come in here and do something like Austin Ryder did in that game against Washington. Joe Callahan, of course, we saw him in that preseason opener, looked pretty good in that game, and has been a guy who spent 5 weeks with the Pack during the regular season, past two with the New Orleans Saints, was at Wesley, where he threw for 5,063 yards last year. First NCAA Division III quarterback to ever throw for 5,000 yards in a season.
Yeah, and
6'1", 216.
And the one thing that pops out to me, and you made mention of him being with the Packers and then eventually getting released and signed by the Saints, it's he passed a lot of the tests to stay employed in the National Football League. And that's a lot for a lot of these undrafted guys, especially from a small school. So that means multiple teams in the NFL, and now Cleveland Browns being the third, that like the attributes and like the tape enough to give to have this guy on your practice squad, on your active roster, in your pipeline. That was the Packers, that was the Saints. And so the one thing that I always kind of say is, and I mentioned it actually as you talked about this transaction, like, oh, he's just a body, and he might have been just a body in Green Bay, and it might have been just a body in with the Saints, but it's better than being on the streets and being unemployed and then having to get signed and to be simply just an arm.
And I think he's probably insurance for if McCown isn't cleared and Kessler's unable to go, he might very well be the backup quarterback for the Browns this week.
Right.
54 of 88 for 499 with three touchdowns and no interceptions during the preseason was Callahan. Obviously, the NFL a little bit different there. But those are the two big things with the Browns today. Obviously, we'll spend a lot of time today, and certainly with your phone calls, we invite you to call us up as well, that this is – a lot about the Indians, the Browns.
Talk tribe, baby.
We'll
whatever.
Talk a little bit of tribe. A big matchup here today. Obviously, Kluber on the hill against John Lester, and it is going to be a big one. Well, let me ask you: our Ohio Business Machines hot topic of the day. Would you rather go to the Indians Cubs game one of the World Series or the Cavs game for the ring ceremony banner raising? If you had to pick one, now there are people who I know who are doing both, but if you had to pick one, what would you do?
I would. I would have to go to the Indians game. The Indians World Series game. The only thing that would kind of, that puts a little bit of hesitation in my mind is once, we're not going to be able to see, it's going to be very special inside the, Quicken Loans Arena with the, the 3D bouncing court, and I'm sure they're going to have something brand new for the first game of the season, incorporating the championship and the highlights of the finals last year and the playoffs last year, culminating in the with the ring and the banner. But if I go to a Cavs game, again, I'm never going to actually see that ring up close, and I'll be able to go in and from my seats look up into the rafters and see that banner whenever I want. Okay. Whereas
it's a World Series game.
It's a World Series game. We are only guaranteed two of them in Cleveland. Only guaranteed is two of them, and have an opportunity to go to one of them tonight. I think it'd be very, very special. The only thing is, and I've said it time and time again, Matt Wilhelm doesn't like cold. Matt Wilhelm doesn't like to be wet, and tonight it is going to be cold.
I love when you get into the third person.
Thank
as
you.
Well.
It's very rare.
It is rare.
I mean, I do love me some me, but I do my best to not reference myself.
Have you heard? I know that you like kind of house electronica. That kind of.
I do.
Have you heard the new? It's a Will I Am song, basically about like I feel myself, like how much he loves himself.
Maybe not. I'll Google it right now. Let's do it in the break.
I think you'll like it. I think you'll get a kick out of it. I heard it and it made me laugh and I was like I put it on my Spotify playlist.
I've probably heard it.
I thought it was pretty
good. Sometimes when I'm driving with Sirius on,
sure.
When I hear a song that I like, if I'm not preoccupied or my kids don't have sometimes my kids have my phone in the back seat, very rarely. But I'll Shazam it. You know, so that way it's like locked in my phone and I don't like immediately go download it. But like every, I'll say once a month, I visit all my Shazams and then I just go to my, you know, iTunes Music and I'll download it, you know, right there from, iTunes Music or Apple Music, whatever the heck it's called, whatever I pay $14 a month for. Yeah, I do it that.
Is it, what's the weather supposed to be like tonight and tomorrow?
40s, high 40s.
Is it going to rain tomorrow?
Well, the high today is 51, at least in Westlake where I live. And okay. I don't suspect it to be that much cooler downtown when you're that much closer
Wednesday
to the lake.
Wednesday night, it says a low of 46 degrees, 100% chance of rain. Is this game going to, is the one game Wednesday? That I have tickets to going to get rained out? Oh, my God. Come on. Can't have that. Would you go sit in the rain? I mean, I'm going to go. If I have a ticket, I'm going to go sit in the rain. But
no,
that doesn't sound enjoyable at all.
No.
All right, so let's see. Hold on. Hour by hour.
Filling myself with Miley Cyrus.
It's only a 10% chance of rain tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Yeah, with Miley. By 11 o'clock, though, it gets up to 80%, so they better play this game with the quickness. With the quickness for me and Cleveland's own. Thumb is. All right, 216-578-0850. Let's talk Tribe. We'll call your shot for game one today.
I think they're winning it all. The one thing that I don't want, and I remember Jason Windhorn. Is that his name? Brian Windhorst. They all run together for me, and I'm jumping over multiple sports. Brian Windhorst said prior to the NBA Finals, and I would imagine it's the same reason that so many that the Cubs are like this resounding favorite and we're this resounding underdog for a reason. And I get it. They were the best team in baseball. They're the deeper, more talented roster, which is all fine and good. But you know what? We set at 0-0 tonight.
Yep.
And the one thing I remember from, you know, one of Wendy's call-ins to the Really Big Show was Cleveland fans cannot panic if the Warriors beat us 113-85 and it looks like a blowout. You have to have that's because, you know, if Steph and Clay can have those 40-point games and sometimes they do it together and they'll just flat out blow you out regardless of who you have, you know, in Superman, LeBron, whoever, sure, whatever. And you just have to be mentally strong enough to know that could possibly happen and not get so down on your team or on yourself to let it affect the enjoyment of being in the finals or being in the World Series. So the Chicago Cubs, just in watching some of the Dodger series, are very capable of that, where it be a 3-1 game, a 3-2 game, and then one inning, a couple of base runners, and boom, it's like it's 8-3, and you feel like you're getting blown out.
Yep.
And so I have a feeling like we're going to win tonight. I have and Cleveland's going to go bananas. And then I have, for whatever reason, and I'm not looking at any crystal ball and I'm not super negative, I want the Indians to win. I believe they're going to win. And I actually want it to happen here in Cleveland. So, but I feel like that night might be tomorrow night, where the Cubs get an understanding of who we are. You know, we don't have our ace, although neither do they. You know, it's going to be chilly, and they're going to gut one out and put some runs up tomorrow night.
I think that you want to come out psychologically and win with Kluber. I think that's important.
Oh, yeah.
And when you start at home, you
want
to get
your ace. You want your ace to win.
You know, the Cubs are looking for a split on the road. The Tribe wants to get both of these games at home. It's going to be a big, big start tonight, though, and it's all going down right downtown Progressive Field. Everybody in this building, it's cool. They said, wear your Tribe gear. Everybody's got their Tribe gear on, which is fun to see. It'll be a big one down there tonight, obviously. So you can call your shot. We can talk a little Tribe. Talk about Tito. I might have my friend Todd Derry call in today, who is probably the foremost Tribe enthusiast and expert in this area, to give us his World Series preview. So we've got a lot to get to, and we will get to it when we return here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. When a medical mistake causes you injury, call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Go Browns! Segura and Wilhelm here. We go to the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. And we will be joined shortly by the one and only Todd Derry. We got Todd? He's all set. Let's bring him in right now. I'm going to call him the official mayor of Tribesville, Todd Derry. What's up, TD?
Beautiful. Best day in Cleveland sports, right?
I think it is, right? We were talking about that. I mean, is this a better day than the actual day when the Cavs won the title, or is it the best day because it's all happening in Cleveland now? Because remember, the Cavs won the title in Golden State. In terms of just sporting events, you've got the Indians playing the World Series, the Cavs raising the banner. I think it is.
I think it is too, just because it's two games. I mean, yes, when the Cavs, here, put it this way. The Cavs winning the title was the most seminal Cleveland sports moment since 1964, and this is the seminal day in Cleveland sports history. You can have it both ways.
I like that. Day and moment, I think you're right. Now, you are as big a Tribe fan as anybody that I know. Nobody deserves this more than you. So let me ask you, as you head into this series, where are you at? What are you feeling? How confident are you in the Tribe?
Well, thank you for, you know, saying I just, no one deserves it more than me.
That's
I would
true.
Agree with you. I would agree with you.
But
how am I feeling? Well, I think the Tribe's going to win in seven, first of all.
Okay.
Nobody has picked the Indians to win against Boston. No one picked them to beat Toronto. No one's picking them to beat the Cubs. We play that underdog role so well, and they just continue to fly under the radar. This series is all about the Cubs and all about the curse, and no one's talking about us. And we got them right where we want them. That's the best part. And, you know, even if they do end up winning the series, it'll be about the Cubs losing. It won't even be about the Indians winning. But to me, the Indians just have some sort of an it factor. I don't know what it is. Francona's pulled every single right string in the book.
All the right buttons.
It's unbelievable. Like, yeah. Every time he's made a move, I mean, Coco Crisp, for example, it was against Boston. They hitting right-handed, he's awful hitting right-handed. He's a terrible defensive player. The Indians had a one-run lead, and he comes up in the seventh inning, and I remember tweeting out and saying to myself, how can he let Coco bat right-handed? You don't even need him. You should get him off the field. He can't field. He's got that terrible arm. Next pitch, two-run homer right-handed over the... Yeah, it's just,
What do you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Everything he does is right. You know, taking out Merritt after the bloop hit, 4 1/3. It was a bloop hit. If the ball gets caught, he stays in the game, right? I'm thinking to myself, how could he be going to Shaw here? And, of course, Shaw, you know, he gave a hit, but then he struck out the next two guys. It all worked out just fine. So every move that Tito makes is the correct move, and it's just we just got that, you know, I don't love using that Team of Destiny thing, but they just have that Team of Destiny feel.
Sure, they absolutely do. And Todd, you know, for me, you know, I'm not the biggest baseball fan. Obviously, I'm always back the Tribe and have watched more baseball in the playoffs than I've watched all season. But their opponent, the Chicago Cubs, I watched just little specklings of their victory over the Dodgers. What scares you most about the Cubs? Is it the pitching? Is it the bats? So what is something that someone like myself has to look out for against these Cubs?
Well, they're the best. You know, they were the best team in baseball all year. They're the only 100-win team in the league, and they ran away with, you know, the Central Division, which was, you know, arguably the best division in baseball. Their rotation 1 through 4. I mean, there's a major advantage now because of all the, you know, the ifs with the Indians rotation. But all four of their guys are legit guys in their rotation. I mean, John Lester is a proven. You know, he's got 2 World Series rings. You know, he's a left, you know, one of the best left-handed pitchers in baseball. Jake Arrieta was Cy Young winner last year, still terrific. He didn't have a great second half, but he's still an unbelievable pitcher. Kyle Hendricks may win the NL Cy Young this year, and John Lackey is now pitching in his third World Series with his, I think, actually, I'm sorry, he's third World Series, four different teams in the playoffs. And all these guys are legit, so they have the advantage there. The Indians obviously have the big advantage in the bullpen, but from a hitting standpoint, they're a deep lineup. They're very streaky, though. Very, you know, in the middle of the Dodgers series, they weren't hitting at all. And they are, you know, they have problems sometimes with left-handed pitching. So, you know, you will see, obviously, you know, we're going to see Andrew Miller as much as possible. But, you know, that's going to be a huge thing to see how they react when Andrew Miller comes out.
He's been unbelievable. And I don't understand how he's a guy. How is a guy like that even available to be traded for? How is he not just... It's amazing to me that he's not the best closer in baseball, that they're using him in the role he is. But, I mean, MVP of that series in the ALCS, just phenomenal when you see him. I know that, and again, I remember I texted you when they took him out. I didn't want him to come out. I wanted him to pitch the ninth, and he went with Cody Allen. I'm like, trust in Tito, that's fine. But that guy is dominant. Why would he ever even be available and passed over for a closing job time and time again?
So the Yankees farm system over the last few years, obviously the Yankees don't, you know, for the most part, they're a team that they sign big name free agents. They trade, you know, they're always in it. They're trading away their prospects for, you know, a veteran player. So their farm system has been barren. So this was the first time that they were out of it. So they traded Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs. They traded Andrew Miller to the Indians. You know, from what everything that I have read and heard was that the Indians package was way better than everybody else's. And, you know, kudos to the Indians. I don't know if Mark Shapiro is still with the president of the team, if the Indians have the guts to make that trade. You know, in years past, you know, the Indians have tried to hold their prospects, and you have to do that in this market. You have to develop. We don't go for it the way they do. But they did, and no matter how great Clint Frazier, the stud prospect that they traded, former first-round pick, no matter how good, if he turns out to be the next Barry Bonds, this trade is still worth it.
Absolutely.
Because Miller is, what we're seeing, you want to talk about greatness. You know, Mariano Rivera is, you know, the greatest closer of all time. He used to, when the Yankees were having their run, a lot of times he would do two-inning saves. He'd pitch the eighth and the ninth. But what Miller is doing is arguably better, in my opinion, because they're bringing him in no matter what the tough situation is,
right,
if it's the sixth, seventh, eighth, or ninth. And he is untouchable, righties or lefties.
And Todd, how about this? How about what's the likelihood of the long term? Yes, we know we love Andrew Miller right now, and it's paying its dividends for us in the World Series to get us here, to keep us there and keep us in these baseball games. What's the likelihood that we see Andrew Miller in his uniform for many years to come?
So you have him for two more years after this season at $9 million a year, which you now look up and say to yourself, this is one of the great bargains in the sport. Because if he hit the market today, he's getting 20.
Right.
As valuable as he is. And the Indians have him on the books for two more years at $9 million each. So, you know, after that, you know, I seriously doubt he'll be around. And, you know, just because he's going to, if he continues down this path, someone's going to give him $20 million, and it's not going to be the Indians because that's not what they do. But, you know, we will never forget this guy. He's unbelievable.
Are you out of breath talking about the Indians?
He's excited.
No, this is how I do it, man. This is how I just go.
Just go. All right, let me ask you this, Todd. First of all, what's the latest that you're hearing from your sources, since I know you're very well plugged in, on Jason Kipnis and this ankle?
It's fine. He's not 100%, but he's close to it. You guys know how it is, you know, especially in football. He'll be shot up with something, and he'll be fine. It might hurt tomorrow, but whatever. He'll be fine.
And, Todd, will this affect him more in the field or at bat?
Probably in the field, you know, ranging to his
just
right or left.
Change directions and such?
Yeah, and he has been very much improved this year. He lost a lot of weight in the offseason. You know, he signed a big contract going into last season, and he kind of got, you know, he even self-admittedly came to the camp out of shape, pulled an oblique at the end of April, was out for a couple months. And, you know, he rededicated himself this year. Best shape that he's been in his career, had the best year of his career. And defensively, you could just see it in his range. I mean, he's a much improved defensive player. So if there's anything with the ankle, it'll probably hurt him going side to side on defense. But I'm not concerned.
Who is your under-the-radar MVP? I know you've had a good feel for this team. Who's the guy that you think, when the Tribe win the World Series, will look back? And I'm not talking about Lindor, who's, you know, the superstar. Is there somebody that you think is destined to have a big World Series and help propel this team?
Well, here, if the Indians are going to win the World Series, Jose Ramirez is going to have a huge part in it. And you know, I don't know how – I mean, I know he's under the radar nationally. I don't know how under the radar he is locally, but – you know, going into these National League Park games in games 3, 4, and 5, you know, they've been tinkering with you know, Carlos Santana took fly balls the other day in left field. He's never played there in the majors, and I can't believe that you would put a guy out in left field who's never played a game out there in the World Series. But you're going to lose either Napoli or Santana's bat. So that makes Ramirez that much more important. So I think J-Ram's going to have a huge series, and he's going to be the key for the Indians in terms of their lineup to win it all.
And how about our ability to – I think the Cubs have the worst throwout percentage in the entire Major League Baseball, and the Indians, I believe, were second in stolen bases. Is that going to be a key factor?
First in the American League in steals, and yes. So tonight, the biggest thing to watch for with John Lester on the mound, and for those who don't know, he has a real – he has like a mental
long
block about throwing to first base. He can't do it. So teams try to bunt on him a lot, and he – only can throw it, like, literally skipping the ball to the base. He hasn't made a throw over to first the entire season, which is incredible when you think about how great of a pitcher he is.
So getting Davis on the base pass is going to be a layup.
huge. You got to get – that's the thing. When he was pitching, the Dodgers never exploited him because they're not a great base running team. The Indians are. So that's going to be a huge thing to watch tonight.
Yeah, I think get Davis on there, led the league in steals, the AL in steals, get him on there and get him running. What do you think about bunting? You're a baseball aficionado. Where do you stand on bunting? Because I see your tweets, and typically you seem to be against it, but there are times when you're happy with the bunt, it seems.
Well,
like.
I would say that, well, that for those who follow me on Twitter, the hashtag is bunting is for losers, because I hate giving up free outs.
Right.
There's nothing that aggravates me more than when you get two straight hits off a guy, he looks like he's teetering, and then you give him a free out with bunting. I know, you're moving runners, and I get it. And there are certain instances, you know, if it's late in the game and you have a man on second, and, you know, maybe Roberto Perez or your worst hitter might come up and you want to get him over to third. There are certain spots where I do it. Coco Crisp bunt in the last series, he did it twice. They were both okay in the certain situations. But I just hate giving up free outs. I just think it's stupid. You'll see it a lot more in the Nat when we go to the National League Park, though. I'm against it completely, especially early in the game.
Yeah, and I think that you're right, and obviously I'm sure Paul DePodesta inside the Browns building would certainly agree with you that from an analytics standpoint, you don't want to give away outs since you only have 27 of them to deal with. But I will tell people, if you cannot go to this game tonight, you need to have a better second screen experience. And what I'm going to offer you is the opportunity right now to follow the man you're listening to, Todd Derry, on Twitter, at TD, the number one, Tribe KU. If you happen to be a Kansas basketball fan, you won't have to go away after the football season. Frankly, I'd recommend you stay year-round. But at TD1 Tribe KU, and he will give you – I mean, your coverage, honestly, I think it's like you're the Twitter Jim Donovan, or the Twitter for the Indians, Twitter Hammy for all those who are on social media during Tribe games.
Well, thank you. I work hard at my craft.
You do. You should be compensated for it. We need to get you an agent or something.
I know.
You compensated for that. But all right, so Tribe and Seven, what's your call your shot for tonight, TD?
I think Kluber is going to go seven strong. You're going to see Miller and Allen. It's going to be another low-scoring game. Tribe 2, Cubs 1.
Let's go. That is the man, Todd Derry. Again, follow him at TD1, Tribe KU. He is the man. He will bring you the knowledge, and so far he has brought luck. I believe that you have some of this. I believe the Derry family is involved in this magic that's happening right now.
Hey, you saw me holding the Torah yesterday. I was up there for one reason, praying for the Tribe to win the World Series.
Oh, and what a great moment it was yesterday, yes. Mazel tov on the consecration, but more importantly, get up there, get closer, so that you can put in a good word for the Tribe. Well, good luck tonight, Todd, and obviously good luck to Cleveland and the Indians. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, boys.
All right, when we come back, we have Sir Andrew Gribble decked out in his Tribe regalia. He even posted a picture of Instagram of his young child in her first Tribe gear. It was very exciting. Even had a World Series t-shirt, right? It said, "My first Tribe World Series." Very good. We got Sir Andrew Gribble in studio. We'll take your calls. For those of you who have been waiting, we'll take your calls right at the top of the next segment, and then we'll get to Sir Andrew Gribble here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Sir Andrew Gribble, and all his Tribe gear. What's up, Sir Andrew?
What's going on?
I'll take a couple of calls quickly because these guys are patient, and we'll get into everything that's going on. We'll start with Ryan in Strongsville. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. You got it, bro.
So it's kind of hard to follow up the gentleman that was just speaking. He pretty much touched on all points.
Todd Derry, he's the guy.
Yeah, you know, honestly, though, you know, if we just do what got us this far and be aggressive on the
right.
base pass and get ahead early and not play from behind, I think we'll be okay. Napoli, I think, is catching fire at the right time, so he's definitely a guy to watch in the series. But, you know, Danny Salazar got brought back to the roster today, so that might be a wild card that may pay dividends for us. So I appreciate the time, guys, and, you know, go Browns, but it's an exciting day to be a Cleveland sports fan. So
It really is. Yes, indeed. And I'll ask you guys about Salazar. Hasn't pitched in, what, a month?
He wasn't pitching great leading up to his last few appearances.
But to make this decision, and I know that I believe it was after one of the games in Cleveland in the ALCS where they did, like, the bullpen mock game, you got to imagine the scenarios that Danny's gone through leading up to them putting him on the World Series roster. He's had to to do a lot and to show them that he's valuable to this team.
And I do think it's in some ways like just in the event that something happens with Bauer's finger again, you have another guy who's like a legit starter.
Give you some innings.
I think he's definitely innings.
But he's also, I worry just if you put him in that starting spot and then he just has a total meltdown in that first inning, it just sets you behind. It can ruin your bullpen for going forward in the series. That's the one thing you want to avoid.
I think what this is, it's another arm, maybe not in a starting role, that can come in and, you know, if he's not, hasn't pitched great prior to getting injured as a starter, can he give us three outs in a game that matters at any point in a baseball game? Because it's like you want to have all hands on deck when you're going into World Series. And that's why sometimes you saw Clayton Kershaw come in for the save against the Cubs. It's like it's anything goes now. I wouldn't be surprised if Kluber in a situation, maybe on 3 days rest, has to come in and get some outs in a key game.
You do whatever you got to do. Yeah, you're not playing
to raise the pennant.
I go into the series no matter what planning to pitch Kluber three times. I don't know how you can not do that.
Even after what happened against the Blue Jays?
I didn't think he pitched that bad.
I didn't either, but the end result sometimes mentally to us as fans and in the clubhouse can talk you out of a situation like that.
He pitched well enough for them to win if their offense was pretty well. I mean, that's all you really could have asked for that in that spot.
But that's life as Corey Kluber with the Indians in the past. In his Cy Young year, he's winning some 1-0 baseball games. He never got bats to
didn't
back
get him the run support. One more call here. Let's go to Lance, who's from Atlanta but is in Cleveland for all of this. What's up, Lance?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
Good.
Yeah, what a great time to visit, huh?
Absolutely. Are you staying for the Browns game on Sunday?
No, unfortunately, no. I'll be gone by then. But, you know, one thing I always told my friends in Cleveland, once I leave Cleveland, that's when y'all start winning. So I guess it's a good omen that I left.
When did you leave? Last, like 2 years ago?
I left in January.
Oh, geez. No, then I guess you're right.
Yeah. But one thing I want to touch on the Browns,
sure.
It's apparent, and Hugh Jackson, it should really rub on him now that you need a big guy back there absorbing those hits. And I was thinking, why would not make a play for Cordell Jones? Just something, give Buffalo, he's on that bitch. I mean, they even had him deactivated one or two games. Try to get this guy 6'5", 250 pounds. That 6'1", 200-pound quarterback is not going to work in Cleveland. And this should tell Hugh Jackson, 6 quarterbacks in one season, this should let him know that you need a big guy back there.
Yes, I think that obviously there's a case can be made for the size of your quarterback in the NFL with the beating quarterbacks taken. But even big guys like Ben Roethlisberger, granted, much farther down his career, but he is beaten up all the time. Joe Flacco's a big guy. He's been beaten up in this division as well. In fact, really kind of ironically, the guy who's been the healthiest has been Andy Dalton, other than the kind of a freak thumb on a tackle last year. And he's not a big guy at all. As far as Cardale Jones goes, at least the reports that have come out of Buffalo are that he does not look anywhere close to being able to play. That's why he's still behind EJ Manuel. So I don't know if that's what you would want. I think you'd probably do something in the draft and get something close to that, but we'll see what happens.
And I'll follow with that. I think that this was a topic yesterday. It's kind of a quarterback decision-making thing where you put some of the blame on the quarterbacks putting themselves in that position. And I think, you know, you don't see a veteran like Roethlisberger at this stage in his career, even though he continues to battle some injuries, he's maybe you get that experience and you live to play another down. You're not trying to make crazy plays where you expose yourself like Cody did on that flip to Barnage. I thought it was a great play at the time, but then when you get down, then you would have liked to have that play back because it ultimately ruined the rest of your game for you.
And one thing is, I believe on the official Cleveland Browns depth chart, Kevin Hogan is listed as the starter right now with Cody Kessler in concussion protocol. Going into this football week, you've got a very physical defensive front. What type of message do you think Hugh Jackson and Pep Hamilton are giving Kevin Hogan on the zone read, or how much of that are we going to carry in this football game? Because if we recall the success with Terrell Pryor in that zone read, and the very next week, I believe against Washington, it was almost eradicated.
Well, I think two things you got to tell him is, one, you got to slide no matter what the occasion, end your play on a slide, don't end your play on a hit. But secondly, you got to plan knowing that whatever the defense you're facing this week is going to be better prepared for it than
right.
The Bengals were last week. I didn't think the Bengals really even adjusted to it all that well
no.
in the game, and it was still opening up for him.
It went for less than 8 yards a run.
It just was wide open. I mean, that touchdown run, I mean, he had the whole field in front of him. I think he described it as the parting of the Red Sea
yes.
in your interview with him. So I think just it's just not going to be that easy against the Jets. I think that's the main thing. And he's going to have to, if he is the starter for this game, he's going to have to drop back, 3-5-step drop, make the throw on the first read, which was something he really struggled with. It seemed like he was dropping back, dancing around, and trying to make something happen. Just never looked comfortable in that pocket, and that's something to win against the Jets. You're going to have to be making comfortable throws in the pocket.
Good news is their corners have not been playing very, very well there for the Jets. We saw Buster, former Brown, get benched at one point. Revis is having a rough year. But the question is, will the Browns have the weapons out wide to take advantage of it? Where will Terrell Pryor be with his hamstring? Clearly not 100%, was not a factor against Cincinnati. And does Corey Coleman come back this week?
But it sounds like Pryor is in a good spot going into this week. I think that playing only 31 plays was probably the right decision, and it doesn't seem like he came away from this game like, look at McCoy over in Buffalo, where he came out for the worse because of what he did.
It seems so dumb of them to play him, by the way. Fantasy owners everywhere are probably pissed off that they did that too.
And it just seems like Pryor came out of this game better. So I think he'll probably be more of a factor this coming weekend. I guess Coleman's a guy to watch. I mean, it's around that timetable where you think he might be able to get back on the field. It might be different from Josh McCown's situation, where you need a week or two of practice before you're cleared and ready to go to play. Maybe if that hand is ready to go, you're ready to go and you're back out there. That's what the Browns would probably be hoping for. And if you have both those guys out there, it makes it a little easier for who's ever under center.
I'm going to back up here for a second. You said fantasy owners everywhere should be what? Because Rex Ryan's trying to save his job, you know, potentially finish second at the division, go to the playoffs, and you think he's going to be concerned about fantasy owners
unhappy? I don't think what he did was smart from a real or fantasy standpoint. You don't try to running back out there who has a hamstring injury when you have a backup who's leading the NFL.
That's
yards
what you should have said. That's what you should have said.
I was just adding. That's why it was an aside. That's you what come from, and that, also an aside.
You come from. You came first for from and foremost.
No,
from,
it was second.
From
second
what's
was
in, what's running through your veins is the fantasy.
Well,
is the fantasy
he
blood
me in my fantasy league.
I think that decision though is an indication of how much of a week to week league this is.
Correct.
I mean, it's like it's the overreaction league for a reason.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you're thinking in the moment, getting on the field, and I think that's why it was good that there was, and Terrell said this yesterday, just he had to be restrained a couple times going on the field, and they had to tell him to get back and not be out there. So I think that it's good that he was limited a little bit, and hopefully you can get the full Terrell Pryor experience this weekend, where he can maybe take, I think he would get up for a game against Terrell Revis the way he got up to face guys like Josh Norman and everything like that. I think it excites him a little bit.
I think it does, but hopefully you will get Corey Coleman back. Now, obviously it is not enough, but one interesting fact about this season is through seven games, even though the Browns don't have a win, they've had five different rookies nominated for the Pepsi Rookie of the Week, which is by far the most in the NFL. And this week it was Emmanuel Ogba. One sack like a week ago, two this week, starting to really play at a high level, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, it's really good. And the way he talks about it, it sounds like for him it was almost like, it's not that he's doing anything technically different. It just seems like the light came on, and the way he described it is, you know, they drafted me high for a reason, and he wasn't doing enough these first few weeks, and now you get two sacks. That's what you want out of that kind of guy. I mean, he may not be there on every single play, but he's the threat that you want at that position. And so if he can, you can't go forward and expect two sacks a game out of the guy, but you just want consistent improvement from him. The way you saw it from Nate Orchard last year at the end, you want to see these guys get better at the end of the year, but Orchard's dealing with the injury now, not out there. You want Ogba to stay healthy and get more confident out there as well.
Did you guys watch the game last night?
A little bit
of the Monday Night Football game?
A little bit. First half. Okay. I didn't watch any in the second half.
I think that the only team that has a worse quarterback situation right now than the Browns is Houston. Brock Osweiler is awful.
I
know when we talked about it, like, I never wanted him here, but he's worse than I could have imagined. And they're locked into him for at least the rest of this season and next year at $37 million, 70 overall.
ESPN had no hesitancy throwing out the whole $70 million quarterback versus the $500,000 quarterback. And it's weird. Their offense, as Houston's offense, you would think, just got better over the offseason, adding Fuller, getting Lamar Miller in there.
Right.
They should be better,
Braxton,
but they just
Miller.
They can't throw the ball downfield. And
he was
making
the
a
worst,
weird,
though. It was a stat. He was the worst downfield thrower in the NFL last year by a wide margin.
I was making this odd point earlier in the offseason. I saw he was only sacked one time. I feel like if you're going against the Broncos defense, you should be sacked maybe a minimum three or four times. Being sacked once tells me he's getting rid of the ball too soon, maybe not hanging in there, finding guys
I'm
downfield.
I'm telling you, the mentality going in that football game for Wade Phillips was, and they did it a lot, and it was showcased by Sean McDonough and John Gruden an awful lot in the first half. It was show one thing,
you know, and then drop into a multitude of zones, just confusing Brock Osweiler so he couldn't make, you know, an kind of like an on-rhythm throw immediately. He had to read the defense and then to deliver the football uncomfortably. And honestly, it goes back to, and I'm trying to think, it was almost like the Ohio State Penn State game where it's like they just want to throw a completion and have it just completed in front of them and come up and break up and make the play on it. That's all it really was.
Well, Chris Harris said after the game, we knew if we took away his first read that he gets jittery, which is funny because he played with him. And Von Miller in the second half put a wicked spin move on their right tackle and got right to him, and Osweiler just threw it away really quickly. And you could see Miller just laughing at him. And it was at a point.
But it was 41. I saw it on ESPN. 41 attempts, 100. It's hard to throw the football 41 times for only 136 yards.
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's hard to do. Could you do better?
Yeah. Come on, man. I could at least get to Gribbs' number of 3 or 4 times being sacked if I survived. I don't know if I'd survive, but I'm pretty sure I could get sacked that many times. That's for sure. I mean, he was not good. I think that is a very bad situation, right, that they've got there in Houston. I mean, they're 4-3. That's a bad 4-3. Now, granted, I'd love to be a bad 4-3 here with the Cleveland Browns. Don't get me wrong, but that was hard to watch last night. And I'll tell you, I'm as big of an NFL fan as anybody, but I really think it's the quarterback play around the league that is the problem. And you have a couple of guys that were, like Carson Palmer last year was playing at a very elite level. This year he is not playing well. You know, Peyton wasn't good last year, but it was still Peyton, so he's still a draw in terms of the product and you wanted to see him. But they're just, you know, you had Trevor Siemian against Brock Osweiler last night. You know, you've got Case Keenum's running around playing quarterback. Kevin Hogan was playing quarterback, you know, and that's a knock on Kevin Hogan. He ran for 100 yards and it was exciting, but man.
But Osweiler's the guy's making $70 million. I mean, that should be a name that sells. I mean, that should be a big name.
That's why I feel they screwed up. And I said it. You remember what I said? I go, if John Elway liked him that much, he's not walking. And the fact that John Elway let him leave said all I needed to know, even though they're trying to spin it now that Brock Osweiler didn't want to.
Well, and the way it was laid out last night was, and this is coming from Brock's side, it's, you know, Brock wanted to be a Bronco, whether that's true or not, and time went by and never received a call from the Broncos, so he had to field calls and other opportunities.
Makes sense.
And that goes back to your point, though, that if the Broncos wanted a piece of him, do you throw out an offer for $50 million to get the guy as he's your franchise quarterback? But it was no offer.
Right.
It was, we're good.
We're good.
We're okay.
Good.
We'll figure it out.
We're good, bro.
See, I'm going back with the NFL ratings stuff. I think some of it is injury related too. I'm going to go on the McCarthy bandwagon on this. It just seems like there's too many guys hurt. I mean, I don't think any other sport could survive ratings. If the percentage of your roster, like if you carry it over to basketball, if say like a team, every team in the NBA is dealing with 3 of their key players injured instead of maybe 5 or 6, it's going to hurt the product on the court. And the NFL is dealing with just a barrage of injuries, not only at the star positions, but just all over the field that makes the product worse.
I totally agree with that, number one. Number two, I think that the NFL's – I think Deflategate hurt the NFL on some level, because you saw kind of how corrupt and strange it was. I think the other part of it is this move to squash any individual expression whatsoever is taking away the essence of what this product must be ultimately to be successful, and that's entertainment. If Antonio Brown wants to have awesome cleats with, you know, Arnold Palmer on it in Pittsburgh after the day the legend died, let him play in those cleats. Like, why? Who cares? Yeah. Who cares? If they want to dance after they score a touchdown and put their lives on the line, who cares?
And even furthermore, I have no problem. It's if the NFL wants to find these players behind closed doors and these players still want to dance and still want to wear those cleats, that's on them. They make enough money to be able to, you know, eat those fines each and every week. But the fact that they have to throw a flag actually just it brings on a negative connotation to the fans, to the point where if I'm one of 65,000 people at Heinz Field watching my favorite player, who's the jersey that I am actually wearing, so the NFL got their money, do something very entertaining to me, it makes me want to come back. And when you throw a flag, it makes me angry. It affects the circumstances of the game, with where the ball's kicked off from, and so on and so forth. And I just think it's all in all, it's very negative. Take the money out of these millionaires' pockets, but don't let it affect the game.
And the other thing, too, that I completely agree with you, but that would never stay behind closed doors in this day and age, because nothing ever gets kept
private. No, but so what?
I don't even think you should. Agreed. I don't think you should fine him, but nonetheless, you should.
But I mean, that is the happy medium.
It's better than what I'm trying to create. The flags, which is a visual ugly thing. The other thing, and this is a point that I've been starting to make the last couple of weeks, and Jason from Cary, North Carolina on Twitter made the same thing. I think one of the problems in the NFL right now is that you have so many colleges playing that spread offense that you're having a couple things come out of that. Number one, quarterbacks don't know how to operate in the National Football League as quickly coming out of college. And number two, I think one of the main reasons offensive line plays so bad are those spread one read. You have to block for a split second. These guys aren't asked to, you know, go from a pro-style run blocking, pass blocking, changing your sets, disguising what you're doing. The screen, it's all bubble screens throughout. Wide.
I'm in the midst of that because at Westlake High School, we have, you know, a quarterback who's, you know, tied the record through nine games for all-time touchdowns in Westlake football history. We run a spread scheme, and I'm just, you know, obviously I'm in defense and special teams. That's my mainstay there at the high school. But you dive into, you know, some of the verbiage and conversations had, you know, being had between offensive coordinator and quarterback, and it's, if they do this, you do this. When he does that, you do this. That's it.
Right.
I mean, and you'll be very honest. It's like when a quarterback does, you know, when what we expected to happen doesn't happen, we've thrown a pick six. Oh, we thought when he did that, he was going to do this. But then when he did that, it's like you were like a robot.
Right.
I saw the guy roll to the middle
field.
And it's
a one-read
robot. I expect it to be, you know, cover three, and they're in some, like, you know, changed up rumble coverage, and their corner jumps up. The corner, instead of being a deep third player, jumps up in cover two. We throw the bubble expecting him to bail, and it's a pick six going the other way.
And I'll throw this out there with the spread offenses. I don't know if you're directly competing against each other, but the spread offense and kind of the way college football is being played right now, it's made college football a more fun product than it used to be by comparison, I think, like that. You've got you have games spread out all across the day on Saturday, and some of them are real terrible, because you know what's going, who's winning before the game even starts. But then you have just some chaotic, offensive-driven games in college football.
Texas Tech, Oklahoma.
I mean, so, I mean, and I think that can change your perspective when you get to an NFL game where it's 3-3 going into overtime. It's just, as much as defensive purists will like that, the audience might not like that as much.
Do you know that's, like, when you see even at the high school level and the technique that the offensive linemen are being taught, is it much different from the spread than it was, like, the technique that you would need in the NFL?
And
so don't you think that's – because I think offensive line play in the NFL in general is horrific right now.
No doubt. And, I mean, everything is based around quicks, speed. And, you know, and it's like from time to time you'll get a dominant football team like Ohio State who can block up some guys and allow JT Barrett to go through multiple reads and throw the football down the field. But everything you see – I mean, dive into the mind of Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury just wants to exploit a weakness in your coverage – deliver the football in under 2 seconds and have their playmaker have the football in his hands in space. That's it. Where is that? You've got a 1-in-5 opportunity. I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't watched a second of Texas Tech. I wouldn't be surprised if they're an empty set. They're in 2x2, 3x1, or 3x2, 70%, 75% of the time. And they're just throwing it, getting the ball in space. You make one guy miss, and you're off to the races. That's what it is. It's tackling, and that's hard to teach because defense is all about tackling. You know, you can't pressure the quarterback, but yet you're going to line up with four down and try to get there some way. You can't blitz anymore, and all you're doing is creating a matchup and having a guy guard a guy in space, and then have to tackle him in space. That's what the spread offense has become.
Yeah, and it's funny when you look at the NFL right now. I think it's clear that the quality of offensive line for Dallas is vastly superior to anybody else's in the league. And it's allowing them to do whatever they want. And then you watch that Arizona-Seattle game. Now, granted, those are good defenses, but the lines were so bad that Russell Wilson didn't get across midfield until they blocked a punt late in that game.
His rushing yard stats was mind-blowing to see that. He's got, like, what, 40 yards all season rushing?
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Hogan just had 104.
And Russell Wilson, in some cases, was
crazy.
Averaging 40 yards a game on the ground.
Right.
Yeah. It's nuts to me.
It really is. It really is amazing. But just an interesting thought. All right, call your shot, Gribbs, tonight. Tribe, what's going on?
Tribe wins tonight because they have to. You got to win every game Kluber pitches. I think that's the going in this series against this kind of offense.
Is that a dangerous mindset, though? Because I think it is true. I think you're right. But does that put a little bit – is there more pressure on the Tribe in this game than the Cubs?
I think overall there's more of the intangible pressure on the Cubs throughout the entire series. I think anytime you're at home – the pressure is on you to win, though. You never want to lose that home field advantage throughout a series.
How much different would today be in Cleveland in terms of the nerves and just even on Twitter? And it seems calmer, more positive than had the Cavs not won and this was the chance to break the curse.
Among fans, it would be a bit the pressure. You'd feel more pressure. But I was saying this earlier. I feel like, especially with the way this team is built, you're kind of happy that they've made it this far. They had so many injuries that they weren't supposed to get this far. And I think that the Cubs are both like this like behemoth that has this 100-year curse combined with the fact that they were by far the best team in baseball this year. I think that all adds up to make this a kind of a, from the outsiders, if you're just looking from the big picture, a very low-pressure situation for the Indians going into the – at least among fans, I feel that way going into this. In the series, if you're just talking game one, game two, pressure's on the Indians to win game one when you have your ace – pitching, yep, when your pitching staff is the way it is right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're exactly right. All right, Gribbs, appreciate the time as always. By the way, big week with the 30th anniversary of the 1986 team. I know you're putting out a ton of content online. What can people check out?
Yeah, we've got a story today with a lot of the players reflecting on the death of Don Rogers that led into that season, kind of them 30 years later looking back on what kind of impact that had on what was a memorable season.
Yeah, good stuff there. Yeah. Sir Andrew Gribble at Andrew_Gribble. Are you going to any of these games, Gribbs?
No. Don't believe so.
What are you doing to watch them?
I'll just be watching at home, with my daughter and my wife until she goes to bed.
Beautiful.
Which will be usually about
same as me,
about third or fourth inning.
Okay. All right. Well, excellent. Thanks for the time. We're back with John Costco from Pro Football Focus. He will be with us right after this.